Hello, everyone. Welcome to Retro Encounter, episode 412. My name is John O'Logan, and we don't want to set the world on fire here at Retro Encounter, but we do want to start a flame in your heart about Fallout. So, yeah, with the Fallout TV show dropping, actually, I think this comes out on the 11th, so I think it comes out today. We thought it would be a great time to do a really deep dive into this iconic RPG series that has existed since 1997 in a variety of different forms. It's always been an RPG, but different genres of RPGs. So there's a lot to talk about today. So we're going to dive straight in. But first, I wanted to welcome two other Vault Dwellers who are here to talk about the series. Abe.
Howdy. I'm here in the heart of Fallout. Las Vegas, baby.
Ooh, Las Vegas.
Yeah. There's a lot of Fallout that's taking place here in the real world and in video games.
Yeah, it really is one of the most iconic locations in the games, and also appropriate considering, you know, testing. Jimmy, yeah. You're here as well.
I am also here, yes.
Are you in a place that has been hit by bombs in the series?
I think I'm in Ohio, so I don't think it's definitely not a major area that's explored. But I'm pretty close to Appalachia, which they cover pretty well in Fallout 76.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in Toronto, which means that I've been annexed by America. But I don't know if any bombs have been dropped here. So, yeah, as you can tell from our joking, Fallout is a series that has a tremendous amount of lore, history behind it. We're going to get into that, but very briefly before we start talking about Fallout on the whole, I just was curious, what are your respective backgrounds with this series, Abe?
So my background goes back to 2002. So I was starting college. I was going to do the responsible thing and leave my video games at home, and then I got really bored. So I made a trek to Target, and I found they had the Fallout 1 and 2 value pack for like $20. And I bought it, and that was the beginning. It was for someone who's really only played Final Fantasy in terms of RPGs, it was a bit of a rude awakening. But eventually I came to love the series, mostly because of the Bethesda games, really. I pre-ordered Fallout 3. I thought it sounded amazing to do Fallout in more of the Elder Scrolls style. So I got pre-ordered at GameStop. I got the lunchbox and the Vault Boy bobblehead.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah, I still got them. That's the beginning of my experience, I suppose.
Neat. Jimmy, how about you?
Yeah, my first experience was Fallout 3. I discovered Bethesda games with Morrowind, and there was a time when I was, grade A Bethesda fanboy. But over time, my love for Fallout far surpassed my love for The Elder Scrolls. I'm just more of a sci-fi guy than I am fantasy in general. But then I've since gone back and played the Fallout 1 and 2 on PC. And it's really a series that, as far as, getting into the expanded lore and getting merchandise and stuff, it kind of surpasses every other series for me.
The lore of this series is absolutely fantastic, and also deeply, deeply it's interesting in the way it took form. We'll talk about that in a little bit. For me, my first experience with Fallout was Fallout 3, sort of. I played it in, I think, 2010, and I bounced off it, believe it or not. I didn't even make it out of the vault. And I just bounced off the game. And then a few years later, in 2014, I believe, I was on Christmas break from getting my master's in Scotland, and I was looking for a game to play, and I decided to give Fallout 3 another shot. And boy, howdy, am I glad that I gave Fallout 3 another shot. I just loved it to death. I think the fact that by that point, modding was in full swing, and many of the bugs that made me go, what the heck is this, were very much ironed out at that point by fans, so it made for a much smoother experience. And then, of course, I moved on, and I played Fallout New Vegas, and then later in 2015, I played Fallout 4, and I fell in love with the series. I just think the series is wonderful. So yeah, my introduction to the series is solidly Bethesda. So let's talk a little bit about, I'm just going to give everyone listening a little bit of an overview of the series. So I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you know at least somewhat what Fallout is. It's a post-apocalyptic RPG series that goes back to, like I said, 1997, a variety of different genres. There are certain things that the series is known for. It's known for its 50s aesthetic, retro 50s aesthetic, where it does take place in the very far future, and even the future where the bombs drop was 2077. But that 2077 was very much influenced by our version of the 1950s. Everybody smokes, cars have smooth lines, and everyone knows about vaults. Vaults are one of the most iconic things in the series, including the mascot of the series, Vault Boy, who is like a 1950s-style American go-get-em kind of cartoon character, inspiration. And Vault Boy can be seen in a variety of inspirational posters right now all around North America, especially in subway stations. He is, because of the Fallout TV show coming out, he is decorating the subway. And it's really, really funny to see satirical Fallout style propaganda posters on the walls of Toronto subway stations. And kind of cool too, actually.
That's pretty awesome. I haven't seen anything here. So that's good to know that they're hitting it hard in some places.
Yeah, it's really funny to see Vault Boy with his message, Mind the Gap. But the series really started with, it didn't really start with Fallout 1. It actually started with a 1988 CRPG called Wasteland. So Wasteland was developed by Interplay, was published by Electronic Arts, who owned the rights to Wasteland. And it was a CRPG that took place in a post-apocalyptic world. Not the one that Fallout eventually took place in. This one was a little bit more inspired by the 1980s. As it was a very much a beloved game released at the time. I've never played it. It is, even the remastered version is very archaic. I thought about playing it for this podcast, and then I watched some YouTube, and I was just like, I don't have the time to play this right now. But it was a hugely influential game for a number of reasons. So we're going to fast forward now to 1994. Tim Kaine, Interplay Productions, is starting work on a brand new CRPG. And much like you, Jimmy, he wants to try something a little bit different. He doesn't want to do fantasy. He wants to try a much more sci-fi angle. So he comes up with the idea for a sequel to Wasteland, like a post-apocalyptic RPG. And unfortunately, EA will not grant them the rights to the license. So they just say, well, we'll do a spiritual successor then. Great idea. Interplay was not interested in this at all. Interplay at the time was, they had just gotten a few Dungeons and Dragons licenses, and that's where they wanted to focus their energy. So Tim Kaine had to assemble his development team from just random Interplay employees who were working on the project in their spare time. And eventually it started spinning up into a full-time project. It originally used the GURPS tabletop RPG system, but when the creator saw how much violence was in the game, he kind of started backing off. So they decided to create their own kind of tabletop CRPG system, which became the Special System. Special standing for Strength, Perception, Endurance, Charisma, Intelligence, Agility, and Luck. Apparently, from what I have read, they did this in a week. They removed GURPS and then they coded and developed their own system and put it into the game. So I know that crunch is considered to be horrible now, but like, I can only imagine the level of crunch that would have required. The first game didn't quite lean super heavy into the 50s aesthetic yet that would define it. There are elements there, like Vault Boy, for example, shows up here. And when the game was being developed, there wasn't a ton of interest at Interplay, but then the game got released, and it was a pretty damn big release. It was considered by many RPG reviewers and publications to be one of the greatest CRPGs ever made. Sales were pretty good. They were not incredible. It didn't reach the levels of Diablo, for example, which was released earlier that year. However, the relative success of Fallout then led to a resurgence in the popularity of CRPGs, which was at that point considered a dying, if not dead, genre. And because of this, Black Isle, who became a subsidiary of Interplay, specialized in CRPGs, including like the Baldur's Gate series, for example. So many iconic CRPG series were developed as a result of Fallout. And not just that, the game's morality system, where you can choose basically whatever options you want, was hugely influential for just about every RPG that includes a morality system after it. So if you've ever played Deus Ex, or I mean, even things that aren't RPG, like Dishonored, for example, those games are massively influenced by Fallout. So let's talk a little bit about the game. So the story, it's pretty basic for the time. You're a vault dweller in Vault 13, and the water chip that helps recycle water is broken. You've been in the vault for hundreds of years. Your descendants survived the nuclear fallout in 2077, and the overseer of this vault sends you out into the wasteland to find a replacement for the water chip. You only have 150 days, and then the vault runs out of water. And in your quest to find the new water chip, you're going to end up encountering a world-ending threat called the Super Mutants, and you end up teaming with the Brotherhood of Steel, a knight-like organization that hoards technology to protect the world from its use. So clearly, lots of iconic Fallout things were in the original game, but it was a very, very different game if you expect what, like, just Fallout. So I got to be honest, I only recently played Fallout. I reviewed it for the site. I think that the review is either out now or it will be coming out very, very soon, as a retro review, and it was my first time playing Fallout. I loved it. But you two actually have experience playing the original Fallout. So for you two, what do you think about this game?
Well, speaking from my own perspective, as somebody that never really had a gaming PC growing up that was always exclusively on console, I had basically no experience with, you know, computer RPGs. But I loved Fallout so much, having played 3 and then New Vegas, that I wanted to go back and really just try to absorb as much as I could from the series. And so really, I mean, the original Fallout was kind of my first introduction to a CRPG. And I loved it enough that, you know, it really kind of gave me a passion for those kind of games. And there's a lot of games that I've played since that I don't know that I would have ever given a chance. So it's kind of interesting, you know, learning, like you said, that Fallout was so influential in some of these other games that on the computer, on the PC. I just find that really interesting. So like Baldur's Gate, I mean, Baldur's Gate 3 is like a whole new level of, you know, CRPG going mainstream now. So yeah, that's kind of where I sit on it.
Well, considering I played it just like a few years after it came out, coming from like games like Final Fantasy and stuff like that, and thinking, oh, this is going to be like an RPG like Final Fantasy, I'm going to run through it. But it's sci-fi, so that's cool, because I also prefer sci-fi to fantasy in general, as settings and ideas and things like that. But yeah, it was coming from just from, you know, the linear game of Final Fantasy, you know, 7 and 8 and such. It was a punch in the face. it's not an easy game. Even now, I tried to push through, you know, a little bit at the beginning, getting killed by little, you know, ants and things like that was, was a little bit discouraging. I had to come back to one, years later. And I never finished it actually, but, you know, eventually I was pretty enthralled by the ideas of so much like freedom that the first two Fallout games give you. The fact that how you build your character out is really going to determine how you play the rest of the game. Having so many paths through each part of the story and the main quests. It's pretty astounding that these first two games were made in 1997. I still think that they still offer a lot more freedom than even a lot of games now have that kind of purport to do the same sort of thing. So it's both kind of like amazing and frustrating thinking back on my time from Fallout 1, but it's hard not to be impressed looking back on it now with the lens of history and video games. So
yeah, for me, again, funny enough, I bounced off Fallout 3. I bounced off Fallout 1 the first time I tried it because it's a friggin' hard game.
Yeah,
Especially coming from the JRPG style. Like, I mean, consider that Fallout and Final Fantasy VII were released the same year, and they're both RPGs. And that idea is hilarious in many ways because while they both evolve from the same source, they are extremely, extremely different games. Final Fantasy VII, of course, is a classic of the genre, and it offers a beautifully told story with memorable characters. Fallout does not tell a beautifully unfolding story with memorable characters. In fact, the companions apparently were an afterthought more than anything, and your character is your name character. So it's very much in the tabletop RPG tradition. This game was developed as a CRPG, which is a very different tradition than JRPG. So when I came to this initially, I was confused in a weird way. Like, not confused, but like I didn't know what to make of it. And it was very, very difficult. And the main part was the interface sucks. I'm sorry, it sucks. It is extremely, extremely complicated, and you just kind of have to push past it. You really do. And once you get it, it works. My advice to anyone playing Fallout, anyone who wants to play Fallout or Fallout 2, you got to read the manual, because you're not going to find a tutorial in this game. You got to read the manual to figure out what the hell is going on and how to play it. And once you do, though, then everything starts opening up in a really quite remarkable way.
And from what I remember, back in the 90s, the PC manuals for PC games were these massive tomes of of information that you'd have to burn through and try to remember and immediately forget everything. So and I believe Fallout was also one of those that had a giant manual just on how to play.
No, it didn't. Also, it contained a lot of lore about the world. I believe it was the Vault Dweller Survival Guide, which is an actual publication in game later on, but. Okay, to be fair, if you want to play Fallout and you don't want to, plow through a massive tome, just go on YouTube. There are tons of how to play Fallout tutorial videos on there that will give you a nice breakdown on how to play the game. Another thing that Fallout does, like you mentioned, is rather than tell a super detailed unfolding story, it is a very nonlinear tale where, you go out into the wasteland to find a water chip and you have 150 days to do so. But what you do from there is up to you. You can go in any direction. Chances are that you will stumble upon the town of Shady Sands, which is a location that will become iconic in the series later for other reasons. And then there's Junk Town, and you come across all of these different locations to find the water chip, and you have to track down clues in some of these locations to figure out where you're going. So it's not open world in the sense that it's like a one continuous world like Fallout 3 becomes, but you're dropped into the middle of this map with these various locations, and you have the freedom to go anywhere you want right off the start. Unfortunately, if you head in certain directions, you might find yourself killed by super mutants immediately. But on the whole, the amount of freedom it gives you is crazy. It's great. What do you make of the, the graphical presentation? Because it is an isometric CRPG, so it's obviously not first person. That comes later. And I found myself, while the sprites are super detailed, again, just because it's from where I came from, consoles, I found myself comparing them to the graphics from, say, Final Fantasy VII, again, also 1997. And I don't think it's anything to write home about. Again, it's the kind of thing that you really need to, someone who's trying to get into it today, you just need to accept, this is what the graphics look like, let's move on. And there's a quite a remarkable game underneath that, but you really do need to push past that.
The fact that it came out in the same year as Final Fantasy VII is extremely weird when you're talking about the visuals. But the gap between like PC and console games in the 90s was way huger than it is now. It would have been it's like a machine that could have run Final Fantasy VII like you know, a personal PC that they could have run Final Fantasy VII back then would not be affordable to the average person. And even something that could run Fallout wasn't like something that everyone would buy, because I mean, it was graphically demanding for the average PC mm-hmm. back then. So they did need to make something that was playable to relatively average people. but actually, like, even looking back on it and comparing it to like even other CRPGs from the time, I'm kind of impressed by the like, there's like a rounded look to the characters and a lot of the items mm-hmm. and things. The environments don't look very good, and a lot of them are copied and pasted, and mm-hmm. so that there's kind of a samey look to all of it. But like the characters and the items, I'm kind of impressed by the it kind of gives you like a faux like 3D presentation because of how they're rounded. the drawings for the items are pretty good too.
And the character art for character portraits for named NPCs and quest givers, that's actually, they're fantastic.
Yeah. And even for like the cheap like 3D models that like the video footage are done in, that they still look pretty good. I mean, if you give it for like, that's like for the time and on a tiny budget, probably. it's actually like impressive what they were able to do with it at the time.
I'm not going to disagree with you. And again, this was not a Interplay did not put what you would call exceptional resources behind Fallout. This wasn't like Diablo, for example, which obviously was Blizzard by that point in time. They had a huge success with Warcraft 2, and they were the best CGI artists in the biz at that point for computer RPGs, like right alongside Square in terms of making beautiful, beautiful pre-rendered cutscenes. So I agree with you. They did so much with so little here. And for very good reason, Fallout is remembered. It was released on October 10th, 1997. So, I mean, that was a long time ago. It's obviously a completely different time. And you're right, Abe, back at those times, like graphics cards and my experience back then, because it was 1997, I was 15, 14. Like this computer was not put together by me. This was not me going out with a Linus Tech Tips guide and picking out like, here's the components I want. You went to the computer store and you said, I want a computer that does email. And they would give you a computer that does email. So it was a different time. And that's one of the reasons why consoles were so popular back then.
An addendum, like my father was my dad was a computer geek. Like mm-hmm. back then, he did, you know, build his own PCs back then. But he was a tech guy. Like the average people didn't even have a computer back in the 90s in North America. I didn't know anybody else that like had a computer that was, like you said, it wasn't for more than email or whatever. And even email was even like too advanced for most people. That was still the realm of tech geeks back then. So, you know, part of the fact that I got into like computers at that age is mostly due to my dad just being a tech geek who was going to shell out for that kind of stuff. So
to those who are kind of curious, to some of our younger listeners, if you want a analogous situation of where computers and the internet was in 1997, I would say that it would be analogous to the release of ChatGPT 3 at the time. Like that's where it was kind of like, it just started to become mainstream. It just started to become something that people could buy and would use, and the internet, and it wasn't good yet, quote unquote good yet, but it was getting there. Fallout, terrific game, landmark game, and started a trend to revive the CRPG genre. And of course, because it was a pretty good success and it sold enough to warrant a sequel, which was released on October 29th, 1998, which is a year and 9 days after Fallout. Geez, you want to talk about crunch. Now, apparently they had started production of Fallout 2 before the release of Fallout, but not a whole lot of it. The game went into full production after Fallout was released. And my God, this game has a kind of a ridiculous development story. So in the game, it's a direct sequel. It's set 80 years after the original Fallout. In that time, a new faction has arisen in the wasteland, the New California Republic, or NCR, who you may recognize from future titles. And you play as the Chosen One, who is the grandchild of the original Vault Dweller. And once again, you're faced with a water-based crisis as your village is going through a drought. So you are tasked with finding a Gek, a Garden of Eden creation kit, which is another piece of Vault Tech lore that will start, you know, coming in future titles. It's a terraforming device designed to restore the wasteland to its pre-war splendor. And in this quest, you're going to be drawn into a war between factions, including one that appears to be the remnants of the United States government. So the big drama of this is early on in development, the ones who were originally responsible for the development and success of Fallout, so Tim Kaine, a bunch of other guys, they left the team to form their own company because, first off, Tim Kaine was opposed to the level of crunch that was going to be necessary to make this game. And also, he just kind of wanted to do something new. So basically, the game itself was made in about 9 months, which is nuts, even considering that they used the engine for the original Fallout and the systems behind it. The game was much bigger than the original. I think there was about 50% more content, more maps. A lot of the issues with the original game in terms of the interface were massaged and fixed. Fallout 2 is where much of the tone of Fallout comes from. Like when you think of the tone of Fallout, Fallout 2 is where it starts to come to the fore. A lot of the lore started here. Vault experiments, that bit of lore started here. The game features LGBTQ plus characters. It included same-sex marriage. This was 1998. No one was protesting the game, so, you know, that makes you wonder what the point is now. Much like other future Fallout titles, Fallout 2 also was buggy as hell. It was astoundingly buggy because, I mean, God knows, with almost a 9-month primary development period, how could you do QA testing during that? The game was also a big success, though not as successful as its predecessor. It got similarly high reviews, and it marked that Fallout is a viable franchise. So at this point, yeah, it was a franchise. There were two games. Clearly, if this thing was a success, and it was, there was going to be a third one, or there were going to be spinoffs. So I got to be honest, this is not a game I've ever played. I have Fallout 2 installed on my computer right now. I am planning on playing it in the next few weeks because I really enjoyed the first one. And I hear Fallout 2 is not just more of the same, but really scratches the Fallout itch in a way that feels, it can't be reminiscent of future titles because that doesn't make sense temporally, but it feels much more like future titles of the series in terms of its voice. So from two people who have played Fallout 2, what are your takes on the game? And Abe, you go first this time.
I just played Fallout 2. I was working on it for a review for the site.
I don't think the review is going to be out yet, but it will be soon.
Yeah. Fallout 2 is pretty incredible in terms of how they took what Fallout did and built on it in like incredibly creative ways. The companions you get are very much more fully fledged than they are in the first game.
Yeah, they're basically meat sponges in the first game.
They're some of the most creative companions in the series. They really, like I said, they took everything in the first game. They didn't just make it bigger, but they took it in like the weirdest directions that they could. And the results are excellent. I think the final stretch of the game is some of the best. It's some of the best like story, like in video games. Like, so, mm-hmm. So Johnny, you better fire that game up and play it.
I will believe
it. It does have a lot of the same frustrations as the first game. I think the random encounters are extremely tough to get through. Mm-hmm. On a positive note, the game definitely gives you everything you need to succeed. And it's not that hard to find stuff that you want. It has one of my favorite endings in video games. You really just got to play Fallout 2, especially if you're a fan of any of the other Fallout games. So,
I really enjoyed Fallout 2. However, I never finished it, probably because I went straight from Fallout 1 directly into 2. And no matter what the series is, whenever I've tried to do that in my gaming fandom, it never lasts. Just my ADHD doesn't allow it. So I kind of abandoned it a little over halfway through, but I loved what I did see. And really, you know, I like playing the other games and seeing there's a lot of callbacks to Fallout 2, a lot of, you know, themes that run throughout the rest of the series that, you know, start right here with this game. So, but yeah, it does. It feels like Fallout more than Fallout 1, if that makes any sense.
It's also impressive the scope, and the locations, most of the Bethesda and Obsidian Fallout games mainly take place around a single city. Fallout 2 takes place across the western part of the U.S. And you actually do, now that I actually live out here, you do actually find locations that have a lot of there's definitely a lot of similarities to the real life locations.
Especially one big ass dam, I believe.
Yeah. Especially the, the thing I liked was New Reno. And when you go to New Reno, it has the real sign that's actually there that says the biggest little city in the world. So I was pretty tickled that sign survived the nuclear apocalypse and is still there. So, it was extra fun for me now, living in the Southwest and recognizing some of these locations and the geography. And
yeah, it's my understanding that I believe his name is Chris Avalon. He's a legendary writer and designer in video games. He's responsible for a lot, including Knights of the Old Republic 2, the Pillars of Eternity games. This was his first big job, was designing New Reno in this game. And we'll be hearing his name later in the series as well.
Yeah, there's there's one random character that you talk to who he says that it's weird that everyone keeps calling him boss, when he's not a boss or anything. He's just a guy, which is funny because in Vegas, that's, if you go to a restaurant or a store, that's what a lot of people will say. if you buy something at the register, they'll say, thank you, boss. Or if you order something at a restaurant, they'll say, you got a boss. And my boss actually at my day job actually calls me boss too. I'm like, no, I'm not the boss. You're the boss. But anyway, it's just a touch of Vegas.
It has a much more satirical tone. It just has a tone, I guess. It's also, if you're expecting a massive graphical leap here, you're not going to get one. It was designed less. It was released over just slightly over a year later. So it looks like the same game.
Yeah.
There are some upgrades, I understand. For example, one of the biggest problems with your companions is if you put armor on them, they just look like random raiders. Like whatever armor you put on them, the character model changes. So it's a little confusing at times. So this fixes that. Also, there is a push option, as I understand it, which is tremendously useful because I ended up with a game-breaking bug in Fallout in the military base. The stupid Brotherhood of Steel meat shields would block my way out of the elevator. So I was trying to escape the base with a countdown going on, and these idiots wouldn't get out of the way, and I could not move them. So I had to shoot one to get to move them, and then of course that ruined the quest because I got back to Brotherhood of Steel headquarters and they were furious at me and tried killing me. So eventually I had to replay the entire military base, this time ensuring that these two dumbasses got murdered by super mutants before the timer was set so I could get out properly. Now apparently you can just push them out of the way, which is a tremendously useful quality of life improvement.
That's right, because the companions kind of wander around the map while you're doing stuff, and a lot of times they end up just stopping in doorways, and so it's nice to just be able to push them out of the way.
Yeah. So Fallout 2 really expanded the lore of the series. Now, We haven't gotten to Fallout 3 yet, but they decided to go in a slightly different direction with the next game, and it took a few years, actually. So this was released in 98, and on March 15th, 2001, Fallout Tactics Brotherhood of Steel was released. So this was a huge change from the traditional turn-based nature of the previous games. So instead of a single character, you're now playing a squad of Brotherhood of Steel members. The combat system is a very complicated system that involves several turn-based mechanics. It works, and the game looks a hell of a lot like a more refined version of Fallout and Fallout 2. Like, the interface, if you look at it for a second, you're like, oh, they just reused the interface. And you look at it a little closer and you're like, oh no, this makes a little bit more sense now. It's a little bit cleaner, a little bit more user-friendly, and it looks a little bit better. But still, the game very much looks like Fallout 1 and Fallout 2. It also has a multiplayer mode, which is apparently something that developers fought against for years in the development of Fallout and Fallout 2. It's also much less of a CRPG in that there aren't a ton of interactions with NPCs, and rather than traverse a world, you're sent to locations for various missions. It also doesn't follow the plotline of Fallout and Fallout 2. Instead, it's a brand new plotline focused entirely on the Brotherhood. The game actually was received quite warmly as a TRPG, a tactical RPG, and it's kind of interesting because it's sort of, I don't want to say it's forgotten by casual fans of the series, but it is certainly not a game that is included when people talk about like playthroughs of all of Fallout. I have not played this game. I own it because I bought a Fallout, I think I got something on, I think it was GOG or something. It was just all of the Fallout games. And I've watched quite a bit of footage of it on YouTube, and it looks pretty darn good, actually. Considering the warm reception it received, it's a little puzzling to me that it is not much more of a popular game in the series. I don't believe either of you have played it either.
No.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, so there's not really much we can talk about here in terms of gameplay and things like that. Just that it started pushing the series in a much more, active direction, because it was moving away from the slow turn-based affair from Fallout and Fallout 2 into a much more real-time combat system. And then we move into what could be described as the black sheep of the series, called Fallout Brotherhood of Steel, that was released in January 13th, 2004. We're not going to be spending much time on this because, first off, none of us have played it, but also it is very, very different. It is an action role-playing game. It's the first 3D game in the series and is generally considered to be pretty damn bad. It is very linear. You can't revisit levels after you complete them. I don't have much to say here. However, I will quote John Tucker, who wrote a review for the site in 2011. He wrote a review for Fallout Brotherhood of Steel, and he starts it with, "Fallout Brotherhood of Steel, bastard child of the Fallout series, hated by nearly everyone who loves the other Fallout games. I played it multiple times back in 2006 when I learned that none of my predecessors at RPG Fan had reviewed it. I knew it was my destiny to do so. Finally, I told myself, this game will get the fair shake it deserves. And so I set off to play it one more time with a purpose. What I found made me question 2006 me's judgment strongly." And John ended up giving it a 60. So yeah, this is basically an evolutionary dead end in terms of the Fallout series. It didn't go anywhere. This was a one-off that I guess they were trying to do something different, and they just failed miserably. So let's not talk about that anymore, because odds are you're not going to play it. We don't want to talk about it. I want to talk about something that is super interesting, though, and that is Fallout 3, but not the Fallout 3 you may be thinking of. So this is one of the great what-ifs of video game history. Black Isle Studios, who was the developer of, they were formed after Fallout, I believe, and they were the developers of and publisher of a lot of classic CRPGs, including Fallout 2. They were the publisher of Baldur's Gate. They were going through some hard times with multiple canceled games. Basically, Interplay was not doing well financially. And also at this time, CRPGs had started descending again. The popularity, that brief resurgence of popularity, started fading. So there were a few canceled games, and they decided to start working on what they assumed would be a much more likely hit, which was Fallout 3. They codenamed it Van Buren after the 8th president of the United States, Martin Van Buren. Chris Avellone, who was, like I said, the designer of New Reno, was one of the main designers, and he and others spent literally months working on the system that was going to be the foundation of this game, using a tabletop RPG setting where they would just play Fallout 3 as a tabletop RPG, and they would refine the systems and refine the systems and refine the systems. The game was going to be using 3D Engine, the first time in the series for the mainline series, and it was going to have the option of both turn-based combat, the kind that was in Fallout 1 and 2, and real-time combat. The real-time combat was a directive that was handed down by Interplay. The developers did their best to ignore that directive, but they needed to include it. The game itself was going to be taking place in the Midwest with a focus on a clash between the New California Republic and the Brotherhood of Steel fighting over the Hoover Dam. There was also a group called the Legion, which kind of makes you wonder what happened with this plot line. A tech demo got released. The game, frankly, looked fantastic. It was a similar perspective interface as Fallout 2 and Tactics, but in 3D, so you could move around. That meant buildings could finally be more than one or two stories. And to say this game was highly anticipated by CRPG fans was putting it mildly. People wanted to play this game. However, financial difficulties at Interplay stepped in, and the game was canceled in late 2003. So, yeah, Van Buren ended its production there, and all Fallout games at Interplay also ended there. And so enter Bethesda Softworks. So, have either of you, before we jump into Fallout 3, have either of you seen anything from Van Buren, like any of the footage online from it?
Actually, the only thing I know about it is that they actually got the ink spots. I don't want to set the world on fire for
finally
to be the they were trying to get that the rights to that song since the first game, and they had finally procured the rights to that song for the third game, which, you know, is like the iconic theme song of Fallout, basically. So yeah. it is a pretty kind of a shame in hindsight that that didn't work out for them.
I remember hearing about this and watching some YouTube like retrospective on it, like a what if scenario. This has been a couple of years ago, but yeah, I think it's really interesting that a lot of those plot developments and storylines would end up being incorporated in later games.
Yes, they will. We're going to be talking about that in just a second, but this is, it very much is one of those moments, those what if history moments. What if Van Buren was released instead of Fallout 3? What if Nintendo released the Nintendo PlayStation with Sony? In that particular parallel history, I think this game probably would have gone down in history as one of the greatest CRPGs ever made. I also don't think it would have been a big success. I think at the time, CRPGs as a popular genre, especially isometric, was on the way out for a period. And I feel like it would have been a critically adored darling, and I feel like it would have sold very, very poorly. It probably would have been the end of Fallout as we knew it for a few years. For the series to continue, I think it needed a much more dramatic reinvention, which it certainly got.
I mean, yeah, the CRPGs were such a niche genre, even in their heyday, with like Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2 and the other Dungeons and Dragons games. So, like I said earlier, like the PC world and the console world were like two totally separate things. until games started being designed on Windows. It was they probably were fighting a losing battle back then. It's cool that like retro you kind of became cool in the 2010s, so we had a resurgence of those. But yeah, you're probably right that it would have been a critical darling, but not sold very well and been the end of Fallout probably, unless somebody else picked it up and transformed it into something else.
Speaking of that, let's talk about Fallout 3. So October 28th, 2008 was the release of Fallout 3 from Bethesda Softworks, a studio known for the little-known RPG called The Elder Scrolls. Elder Scrolls was a big thing back then. Elder Scrolls took, I guess, a lot of the mechanics of CRPGs, a lot of the trappings, a lot of the inner workings of it, and they switched the perspective over to first person, which dramatically expanded the audience for several reasons. It was just a little bit more accessible, but also first-person games work really well on consoles. So Bethesda Softworks at this point, they were working on Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, and they decided to try to get the Fallout IP. They got the rights. They won a bidding war, actually, I think Tim Kaine and some other folks from their company that they started when they left Black Isle, they were also bidding on Fallout. They wanted to be able to make Fallout 3. And they, frankly, they just couldn't compete with Bethesda's money, because even back then, Bethesda was a very, very rich company. So Bethesda got the rights to the games, and they decided that we are going to make our version of Fallout 3. So they took all the work that was put into Van Buren, they put it aside, that we're not going to touch that, and they started a completely brand new story. They wanted to base it a little bit more on the tone from Fallout 1 rather than Fallout 2. So it was going to be it'll still have that feel, it'll still have that satirical look. They're going to really lean heavy into the 1950s aesthetic, because now they can, because it's going to be a completely open world and 3D world. The team was led by Todd Howard. Maybe you've heard of him before. And yeah, they were going to do so much with this. They were going to expand the series lore. They were going to introduce the VAT system, which was an adaptation of the aiming system from the first two games. But now, basically, you can use it to freeze time when you're shooting and aim at specific body parts. Wrist-mounted pit boys, they were introduced with this. And look, I know that many fans out there might lament the move from CRPG to first-person RPG. They feel that Fallout 3 cheapened the series. It made it much more superficial and accessible, and they ruined Fallout. But honestly, this thing hit like an atom bomb. It had massive sales. In the first week, it beat the sales of all previous Fallout games. Critical acclaim from across the board, even the original developers of Fallout, who they had some criticisms, but they praised it. Yes, the game was a buggy disaster, as par for the course with both Fallout and Bethesda. But, you know, patches can come out, and eventually fans can fix everything, which we'll be talking about later. But Fallout 3 was a landmark game. And one of the big reasons it was a landmark game is because, yes, it was available on PC, but it was also available on consoles at the time. And this dramatically expanded the audience to this thing. It was an incredibly imaginative world presented by masters of the genre at the time. Probably the most popular, some of the most popular RPGs available at that point were Elder Scrolls. So there's no way this thing wasn't going to be a hit. And I think it deserved to be a hit. I think that people who say that Fallout 3 ruined Fallout are wrong. I don't like saying opinions are wrong, but I think they were just wrong. You can argue after this where the series went, whether or not Fallout today is ruined. But Fallout 3, I think they did a remarkable job of it. That's my personal belief. Both of you have experience playing the game. What do you think of Fallout 3?
Well, after playing Fallout 2, I did boot up Fallout 3 again. It had been a long time since I played it. I really hadn't played it until shortly after launch. Mm. So yeah, I hadn't touched it at all basically since, you know, it came out. But after the archaic systems of of Fallout 1 and Fallout 2, it's really kind of a breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. Just to be able to walk around, and the VAT system is really nice. Not only that, but the developers definitely loved the Fallout series. Mm-hmm. Somewhat, you know, the designs for the weapons and the armor and like the general world all look exactly how you'd expect it to after playing Fallout 2, but reimagined in Bethesda's Elder Scrolls style world. And mm-hmm. I mean, it looks better than Elder Scrolls 4, which was their previous game at the time.
In a lot of ways, it looks better than a lot of games today, actually.
Really. It still looks pretty good. You can tell it's dated to the 2000s, but yeah, it does look really good. And the freedom is, you know, the freedom that the first two games gave you is there. You have maybe not as intricate as it used to be, but you have, you know, so many options on how to proceed through quests and the main story. I like that, you know, if your speech skill is high enough, you're able to lie your way through quests and just say that you did things even though you didn't. that's a nice touch, and even something that we don't really see all that much anymore. It's a really, you know, it's a good RPG. I guess the Elder Scrolls are kind of a first person view on Dungeons and Dragons essentially. And You know, I think they translated that very well to Fallout, but making it Fallout 3, but making it more of a, you know, more of a Fallout experience, and
yeah,
and harkening back to the old games. So I think it's, yeah, Fallout 3 is really, it's really an impressive piece of work there.
Jimmy, I'm going to ask your opinion in just a sec, but I forgot to mention a little, just a basic plot of Fallout 3. Much like the very first game, you're a Vault Dweller. This time you're known as the Lone Wanderer. And in the opening scenes of the game, it shows you growing up in the vault with your father. Your father is the doctor in the vault, and you play as yourself at various ages growing up. And then all of a sudden, something happens, and your dad escapes the vault, and there is a riot. And there, the vault is locked down. You have to fight your way out of the vault, and you need to try to find out what happened to your father, where he is, why did he leave the vault? And the game just literally, very much like the first game, dumps you out in the world and says, pick a direction and walk. And in this game, there are more landmarks that you can see in the distance to give you direction towards them. Megaton, for example, the iconic first town in Fallout 3. But the level of freedom that you're given is quite remarkable. So that's the start of the game. Nice, good, solid, basic, open-ended story right there.
They also got to... Bethesda also got to Liam Neeson to play your father, which is
that's
a pretty impressive pull for the time, since he was coming off of Star Wars.
Yes. Jimmy, what is your experience with Fallout 3?
Yeah, it just made such a huge impression on me. I still love it. I played it again last year, the Game of the Year edition, because I had never played through some of the DLC content before. But I was actually surprised how well it still holds up. And I think what sets it apart from, say, like Elder Scrolls for me, is just, I think that the setting, the whole aesthetic, a lot of the characters are just more memorable in Fallout than they are in Elder Scrolls. And I'm not sure why that is. I think a lot of it might have to do that it's based on, you know, an alternate version of, you know, in this case, an alternate version of Washington, D.C., as opposed to, you know, a completely fictional realm that somebody else has created. You know, knowing that I could actually go, you know, see some of these monuments in real life and, you know, navigate through, say, like the subway systems. Yeah, just when I'm playing through and every little building or location you come to, like, looks interesting enough that I want to go into that building and see what I can find in there. That I just don't get that from many games that give you that kind of freedom. I think a lot of games that are open world, a lot of that is kind of artificial, or empty. There's not really interesting things to do. But even, you know, playing it, the most recent playthrough, I discovered things that I had never come across before. And I've played Fallout 3, I think 4 times through main story completion now. So yeah, I just love it.
I agree with you. And I think what this game does, a number of things that Fallout becomes known for. The first off, like you said, this takes place in an alternate Washington, D.C. This game is really, there's some of this in Fallout 2, obviously. And Chris Avellone, in the preparation of Meg Van Buren, wrote the Fallout Bible, which was a massive tome of detailed lore involving the history of the civilization before the bombs dropped, including much about the vaults and vault tech. A lot of that is non-canon now, has been rewritten by Bethesda and future entries of the series. But this is the first game that really started to lean into that alternate history and give you a look at the world, give you a lot more hints about the world of 2077 was before the bombs dropped, including some of my favorite moments of the series, which is visiting the parallel versions of the Smithsonian, for example, where you get to see literally the alternate history of this world and see their version of Apollo 11. I think it's the Valiant 11 in this reality. So a tremendous amount of world building in Fallout 3, and also a tremendous amount of environmental storytelling. Again, because the initial Fallout series was isometric, looking down, and mostly buildings were one story, if maybe with a basement, maybe with a second story in some of the bigger ones, but it was mostly a pretty flat game. Here, environmental storytelling is remarkable. You come across little scenes, little stories, just bodies and skeletons placed in certain positions that have you asking, what happened here? And then through the use of holotapes, you can find out what happened there by listening to their stories. Also, the sense of exploration in this game. I'm sure that you two had the same thing. There was my first time playing. There was nothing more exciting than going to a location, poking around it, just kind of looking around, and you turn a corner or you open a door and there's a vault there. And you're just like, oh my God, I found a vault. And you just, you know, what's awaiting you inside that vault is going to be some kind of epic story of tragedy or horror or something cool is about to happen when you see a vault door in front of you. And those are some of my favorite moments from Fallout 3 and from future Fallout games.
And from Fallout 2, actually.
And from Fallout 2, yes. Although with Fallout 2, again, because it's isometric, you can see a little bit in front of you. I mean, literally turning the corner and there's just a vault door there. Yeah, Fallout 3 is a landmark title for a lot of reasons. I think it's a brilliant game. I think it holds up tremendously well, not the least of which is because mods have smoothed over some of the rougher corners, which, again, we'll be talking about in a little bit. But Fallout 3, in some ways, was a foundation for what many people consider to be just not just one of the best games in this series, but one of the greatest games ever made. And that is a little title called Fallout New Vegas. So post Fallout 3, there's clearly a huge demand for new Fallout. Unfortunately, Bethesda was a little bit busy. They were working on a little title that became known as Skyrim. And clearly it would be a few years before they could turn their attention to Fallout 4. But because the demand was there, they didn't just want to let it die, so they farmed out the next game in the series to an external developer. And that external developer happened to be Obsidian Entertainment. Obsidian is the company that formed from many of the original, many people who were at Black Isle Studios when it collapsed. They went and they formed Obsidian. Since then, Obsidian has become known for the revival of the CRPG, I guess the second revival of the CRPG genre with Pillars of Eternity, lots of other titles, including, you know, a certain one. Anyway, and also Chris Avellone ended up there, who was the writer and the developer of Van Buren. So he came back as the writer. And as a result, we sort of got Van Buren with Fallout New Vegas. Many of the elements that were developed for Van Buren, such as the location, Hoover Dam, the Brotherhood and NCR combat, and the Legion all ended up in this game. It had a development time of 18 months, which is nuts. And even though it was using the same engine and many of the same assets of Fallout 3, which theoretically should have saved on development time, it didn't really because none of them knew how to use the damn engine. So yeah, the result was just a ridiculously, ridiculously buggy game. Again, you know, thankfully, time and fans have fixed a lot of those problems. So if you play New Vegas nowadays, you're going to get a pretty smooth experience. I'm not going to mince words here. The game is just absolutely fabulous. So fabulous. I played it immediately following Fallout 3. I finished Fallout 3 and I was like, more, I want more. And I loaded up New Vegas. And what I got was a game that was very similar to Fallout 3, certainly in terms of the gameplay. But the tone was there was something about the tone that just made me go, oh, this is something special. And it's the tone of Fallout 2 and the tone of Fallout, including there's a trait called Wild Wasteland. And rather than change anything about your gameplay, it adds in just some weird, weird random encounters, like super weird random encounters that really do make you go, oh, this is very reminiscent of Fallout 2. I adore this game. I just adore it. I think it's wonderful. I think it's a tremendous experience. The DLC for it is incredible. Honestly, if someone says, I want to start a Fallout game first time, I would probably direct them to New Vegas. Have either of you have similar opinions or any, I guess, differing opinions about Fallout New Vegas?
No, I'm pretty in level with you. It's my favorite of the series. It's probably one of my three favorite games of all time at this point. I just love everything about it.
It's so damn good.
Yeah, it really is. I think it improved on Fallout 3 in a lot of ways. That's not taking anything away from Fallout 3. However, I'm not one of the people that likes to think that Fallout 3 is a bad game nowadays, which some.
I'm not either.
That opinion is definitely out there. But yeah, New Vegas. I think just something about the series and New Vegas, and especially that I've never really gotten into doing for other series is, you know, just building characters and all the different ways that you can, you know, find a solution to a problem, whether it's just the way you build your character or your attributes or just the different perks, like you mentioned the Wild Wasteland. You know, I find myself picking perks for a character that I never would have thought that I would have, you know, been interested in trying in these games. But, you know, here I am. Like, I actually think it was Fallout 3. I've actually used the Child at Heart perk before, which is it essentially unlocks, you know, unique dialogue options when you're talking to kids. And, you know, there's a couple of really cool instances where you can basically, you know, talk a small child into giving you, you know, the code to crack a safe or whatever, you know, just little things like that, is really what I love about this series as a whole. But, Fallout New Vegas, especially, I think hits a lot of those just right on the head.
For me, I think what makes Fallout New Vegas really special is the reputation system. So there are so many different factions in this game, including the main ones, of course, you're the NCR, you have the Legion, but there are so many other little ones too. And the actions you take in your quest, the choices that you make really do influence what happens to these groups and also how these groups react to you. And the difference between these groups is so clear because each represent a, I guess, a different form of civilization of post-apocalyptic wasteland. So, for example, the NCR is the closest thing to the United States of America. It is kind of, it's like a benign bureaucracy with regular levels of corruption. It's society basically as we know it today. Relative levels of peace, but there's also expansionism and a certain sense of self-centered mentality that they are better than everybody else. Then you have the Legion, which is sick. It's based on Roman ideals, but like slavery is celebrated. Crucifixion is a form of an everyday use of punishment. Women are essentially broodmares for the state. It's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. And then, of course, there is the New Vegas way, which is very much freewheeling, capitalism, absolutely gambling, excess consumption, individual freedom, which is represented through New Vegas. And in the game, the choices that you make, you know, you pick factions, you pick winners, and the various endings that you get from this game are divergent in a way. There's so much choice here. It's just a kick. It's such a good game. It's so good. In my opinion, it might be one of the greatest RPGs ever made. I think it's brilliant.
New Vegas is unfortunately the main Fallout game that I have the least experience with, but it sounds like I need to have experience with it. You know, living in Vegas now is, and looking back at the game is pretty fun. I liked the opening cinematic where you get shot by the mafia. That's very much feels like old.
Get shot by Matthew Perry.
Very much feels like old Vegas. That's something that would have happened to you if you ran afoul of the mafia.
Yes.
So, yeah, I at least appreciate that callback. And there's a few things that resemble old Vegas. At least the, you know, photos I've seen of it.
Yeah,
but that's really all I can say. I also appreciate the very different, like the beginning of your quest where you're not specifically, you know, a vault dweller who's coming out of the vault. You're just a courier who's got to deliver a package. definitely makes you feel like a much more like just like a normal person who's part of this world instead of the chosen one, like right off the bat, like that you're supposed to be, you know. And the previous games, so at least in the setup, there's a lot of cool different ideas that they're trying.
Yes. I'll tell you this. I'll tell people the setup of the game because I forgot to mention it. So in this game, you play a courier who is hired to deliver a platinum chip to New Vegas. You don't know what it is. It's just your job. And you are ambushed on the way by a guy named Benny, who is played by Matthew Perry. And you are shot in the head and you are buried in a shallow grave in the desert. But then you are rescued by a strange robot and you are sent on your way to New Vegas to try to reclaim the platinum chip. And either you're looking for the platinum chip or you're looking for revenge. And along the way, you encounter various factions that you will come to know throughout, and you will be drawn as a pivotal figure into the battle for New Vegas. It's real good. It is real good. Abe, I highly recommend you play it at some point. If you want, I will give you some recommended mods for it. But it's great. It's especially astounding that it was done in 18 months, even as buggy as it was. So, Fallout New Vegas, unfortunately, was the last Fallout game we were going to get for quite some time. These things take some time to build, and also, I cannot possibly imagine that Bethesda was particularly thrilled that what is considered to be the greatest Fallout game was not made by them. It was, in fact, them farming it out to another company because they couldn't be bothered. I might be wrong. I always thought that might be a stick in their craw a little bit, especially considering how little we hear about New Vegas. So the next Fallout game, you might think it's Fallout 4, but it's not. It's actually Fallout Shelter. We're not going to talk about this for very long, but I do want to mention it just because it's really funny. It was back in these days, mobile gaming was taking off and Bethesda wanted in, and they created Fallout Shelter, which was a free-to-play management sim where it's a 2D kind of game and you essentially build and manage your own vault. And honestly, it's fun. You need to keep your vault residents happy by giving them food, water, electricity, the other essentials for life. You can send out parties into the waste to gather resources. You can bring in new vault dwellers who show up at the vault door. There's no real story here. It's a mobile game from 2015. What do you want? But there's a lot of fun to be had here. And the real reason I think this game was released was to wet the whistles of fans, because in just a few months, Fallout 4 was going to come out. And incidentally, this one's a little bit of interesting trivia. There is actually a sequel of sorts to Fallout Shelter called Fallout Shelter Online, which actually does have a storyline. And apparently it's pretty damn good. However, it was only released in China and other countries in Asia. Though it was translated into English, it was never released here, which is actually kind of a shame, because there is a full-fledged Fallout game that is not available here in the West. Kind of shades of what it was like to be in a JRPG fan in the 90s there.
And now.
And now, yeah, you're not wrong. Have either of you played Fallout Shelter, like even in passing, like when it came out?
Yeah, I dabbled in it for a while. I don't play a lot of games on mobile at all. But, you know, just because it was Fallout, I did, you know, it definitely sucked a few hours of my time away from me. But yeah, I mean, it was actually pretty relatively enjoyable.
Yeah, I would argue in the wasteland of mobile cash-ins from the mid-2010s, this did it better than most. It offered an interesting experience that was, you know, forgettable, but really did do the job, which was to make Fallout fans anticipate Fallout 4.
I can't say I have any experience with this either, actually. But I do think it's funny that considering the series roots is basically a do-it-yourself sort of thing, turning into getting to the point where it's doing the cash grab mobile sort of thing, sort of idea. But, you know, if it's a good game, it's a good game. So
I don't even know if I classify it as a good game. I think I would classify it as a good game for mobile in 2015. This is not a title that you need to pick up nowadays. Let's put it that way. Okay, so let's move on now to what is the next big title, which is, of course, Fallout 4. So Fallout 4 was released on November 10th, 2015. It was the first entry to use Bethesda's creation engine that was originally used for Elder Scrolls V Skyrim. And this is a controversial game for a number of reasons. It started to move away from the pure RPG mechanics of the original games, even more so. It had a very linear story with two set player protagonists who voiced lines in character in the game. So that somewhat limited role playing. It brought a more like a pastel color palette that made it a much brighter and, frankly, almost happier looking game than either Fallout 3 or New Vegas. And I also don't care because I love this damn game. I'm a big fan of Fallout 4. I really like it. So the storyline is, it actually is the first game where we see pre-war America, and the opening, it's set in 2077. And you are either Nate or Nora. And the character creation screen is them looking in the mirror, and you can, you know, adjust your face and pick your traits and everything there. And you get to see like an average day in America, and Nate and Nora, happy married couple with a bouncing baby boy, and a Vault Tech salesman comes to your door knocking and trying to sell you a space in a vault, and you buy one, and you, at that point, you set up your stats and everything. And then very soon after, the bombs start dropping, and you and your spouse grab the baby and you run out to the vault, which is, you know, very luckily in your backyard, Vault 111. You're taken down, you're given your vault suits. So this is the first time we've ever seen like admission into the vaults, and all of this is happening while the bombs up top are exploding in Boston. And you are led into cryo tubes, and you are put into cryo sleep. And suddenly your character wakes up, either Nate or Nora, and you are stuck in your tube looking across at your spouse and your baby. And there are strange men in medical looking clothing and a raider looking guy, and they steal the baby and they shoot your spouse in front of you and then put you back into cryo storage. And then you wake up again. And you stumble out of your vault and discover that you are over 200 years in the future. You have been in cryostasis for over 200 years, and the world is destroyed. And your job is to go out and find your baby. And by that, I mean your job is to go out and be distracted by every single thing you can possibly imagine along the way. And the baby becomes secondary to all of these quests, which is an inherent flaw of the game, I will admit. So I love this game. But I know that some people have different opinions. I don't know if either of you have different opinions. What are your thoughts on Fallout 4, Abe?
I actually played this one less than Fallout 3. it's not because of the quality of the game. It was more just stuff that was going on.
It's a big task. It's a big game.
Actually, the biggest thing is mostly that my wife really got into it, and I was mostly watching her play. I probably watched her play more than I actually played the game myself, which is fine. but, you know, I watched enough that I felt like I played it a bit. I like the base building system is pretty fun. It, you know, really adding to the idea of having companions in this world, especially since, like, you know, the earlier games had less of an emphasis on companions, and now you're putting your whole little family to the neglect of your actual family. it's been a while since I played it, but I feel like I remember everything about it being very colorful, and not just in terms of visuals, but the characters that you encounter being really colorful, and I feel like I remember the monsters being kind of cooler, there being a lot of more creativity in designing that kind of stuff. I feel like that's all I can say about it, because that's as much as I remember. But
Jimmy, how about you?
So initially I couldn't get into Fallout 4. I think what I didn't like about it initially was the kind of base building, you know, survival aspect to it that I just wasn't feeling at the time. So I kind of fell off of it. But then a couple of years later, I think it was during the initial shutdown for the pandemic, I gave it another shot. And, you know, the more I got into it, the more.
Sorry, it says a lot that you're like, oh, God, this world is horrible right now. Right. I know. I feel like an escape into a post-apocalyptic nightmare. Yes,
into something, you know, just as bad. The more I got into it, the more I enjoyed it. I actually am really positive on the game now. I kind of gave it a pass on the base building, you know, because it's not something that the game forces you to do it, but it's an option for those that want to do it.
It's highly recommended.
Yeah. I do have some fun, you know, decorating and, having a place to look at all my bobbleheads and stuff like that. I think a lot of memorable characters. I think another thing that I haven't mentioned yet about the series as a whole is just some of the humor that's present in this game. Just some of the dialogue with your companions, or Nick Valentine specifically has a lot of really funny stories. Essentially, he escaped a dangerous situation by convincing a bunch of raiders that he was rigged with a bomb and just stood going beep, beep, and got himself out of that. Just I think the game does humor really well. So, yeah,
I think it does, too.
I have come around to Fallout 4.
There is a lot to like about Fallout 4. The problem with Fallout 4 really is, and the story is actually quite good. Like, it's a compelling story. The problem, though, is that Fallout games are generally so open-ended that give you all this freedom in the wasteland that I feel like the overriding story of you need to find your kidnapped infant should logically trump everything else you're trying to do. But because it's a Fallout game, it can't. And that creates this weird cognitive dissonance where you're like, I should be doing this, but also, hey, what's that? Oh, there's a little city over there with a giant Mr. Handy. I wonder what that is. And you spend a couple of days over there just checking that out, which is a problem. And a problem that actually some mods have attempted to fix. And again, we'll be talking about those in a bit. And you're right. The base building mechanics, though they are not essential to the game outside of, you know, highly recommended in some places, they are key to the game. They're very central where you rescue settlements and you try to build up the wasteland again, which is a problem if you don't like a very, very fiddly pain in the butt base building mechanic that takes hours and hours and hours. And I never got very good at it. Again, there is a mod that fixes that, which we'll be talking about in a bit. So Fallout 4, I think, is well worth anyone's time. I think it's a great game. I really do. It is buggy as hell. At this point, why even bother saying the word bugs? Because that's sort of implied in the Fallout experience. But again, if you want to have a better experience, there are lots of fan patches that fix most of that. Fallout 4, I think it's a great game. I really do. Again, it's not necessarily what I would consider to be the best in the series or the best place to start. I think that's New Vegas. But I think that it has a lot to offer. Really some great companions, some great storytelling, and has all of the strengths and weaknesses of a Bethesda-style game. Now let's... Okay. Speaking of the weaknesses of a Bethesda-style game, we're going to be talking about something that came out on November 14th, 2018, and that is Fallout 76. So at this point, it had been 2.5 years after Fallout 4. There was a definite appetite for a new Fallout game, and Bethesda decided to just go after that money. And they started hinting about it in May of 2018. And I remember the speculation at this time being like, oh, Bethesda's making other games at this point. They can't possibly be working on a new Fallout game. Maybe we're getting a new one. Maybe we're getting a new Fallout New Vegas style game from a third-party developer. Nope, they were developing the game, all right. And they announced it in early June 2018. I was beyond excited. And it's Fallout 76, and it was going to be a multiplayer Fallout game. It used the same engine and many of the same things, items, designs from Fallout 4. And it was only going to be set a few decades after the bombs fell, giving us a West Virginia wasteland with folks who actually remembered the world before. Or at least that's what we thought. Then it was announced that, in a very interesting turn, there were not going to be any NPCs here. There were going to be enemies. They were going to be called the Scorched, and they were going to be like super intelligent ghouls. But the only characters, the only people that you would meet in this game were going to be your fellow players. And Todd Howard at the time pitched this as a massive innovation where every encounter with your play, it's going to be special and it's going to be amazing. The plot of the game is you are a resident of Vault 76, which was a vault that was apparently designed to be hold the best and the brightest of America. And they were going to be going out 20 years after the bombs dropped to rebuild America. So like right off the top, there's a major problem with this because the average player of an MMO is not going to be considered to be the best and the brightest of America. They're going to be jackasses. And that's certainly what we ended up getting. So you end up getting a bunch of people who make the situation worse. Worse than that, storytelling becomes entirely reliant on holotapes. And while Fallout, and my favorite parts of Fallout 3, New Vegas, and 4, involve seeing little stories of tragedy, essentially, where you see people struggling to survive, and you hear the aftermath, and you find the bodies, and you hear the holotapes, you still know that there's society out there. You still get hope. You still find people who are alive and thriving or trying to survive. In Fallout 76, especially the first version, it was just nihilism on the extreme. Every single story, every holotape that you found was just death. It was always ending in tragedy, and it just became overwhelmingly depressing to play this damn game. And then there was the end game, which was a mess. The Scorched Plague is there. The solution is that you need to drop a bomb onto these fissures that opened up in the earth to close them to stop the Scorched Plague. And then you need to theoretically team up with other team members to kill Scorch Beasts in the sky. It was bad. It was bad. It was buggy. It was the first review I wrote for the site. I'm pretty sure that you've heard this before, and I gave it a 62. It was not an enjoyable experience at all. It was a miss. It was an absolute baffling mix from Bethesda. Made no sense at all. There were some positives. The world design was incredible. The West Virginia wasteland is stunning, and it's an interesting place full of fascinating locations to explore. But not having any NPCs did kill the game, in my opinion. And also the multiplayer aspect never really came into focus. Now, things changed, but let's talk about the initial version. Do either of you have any experience playing this game, or am I just sitting here like a lonely player in my own instance of West Virginia?
Unfortunately, this was during my kind of phase of being really into MMOs and like online multiplayer looter shooters. I got really into Destiny for a bit. I was really into the first Division game. So what I was hoping for Fallout 76 was something more along the lines of those. So I, like you, was super excited when it came out, and horribly disappointed. Did not enjoy my time at all and never went back to it. Although I know that there's been a lot of changes since, I've never given it another shot, just because I was so soured by that initial experience and did not enjoy my time at all.
Yeah.
conversely, I've never really been much of an MMO guy. And so that initially put me off of it pretty well. And then that was, I'm pretty sure that came out before I was with RPG Fan. And so it was probably your review, John, that put me off of it, like for good. like you pretty much confirmed you pretty much confirmed the worst things for me. So, I never really felt the need to dig into that.
Mm. Yeah, my experience with the initial version of Fallout 76 can be summed up in a message I sent to Alana, which was, I was in the final dungeon, I was about to drop the nuke, and the game crashed hard. And I logged back in, and I found myself outside of the initial dungeon. And I just messaged Alana being like, Alana, I know the site has a policy, you need to complete the game. And I know this is my first game I've reviewed for the site, but please don't make me go back in there. And she was like, no, you've got the experience. You don't need to drop the bomb. You got there. It's fine. Write the review. And I did. So a few years later, Bethesda. Okay, first off, a lot came in. The story of Fallout 76 is nuts. It's absolutely insane. If you want a interesting look at it, there are tons of YouTube videos out there, including Matt McMuscles has a two-parter of his series, What Happened. Incidentally, if you have never seen What Happened before as a show, it's a tremendous YouTube series where it breaks down everything that happened in this game. And just like, it wasn't just the game itself. It was everything surrounding the game. It was the merch surrounding the game that Bethesda screwed up every single time. I think it might go down in history as one of the biggest disasters in video game history in every conceivable level. It turns out that Bethesda, as we think of them, we're not the developers of this. It wasn't even the B team that was the developers of this. It was like the C team who had no idea what they were doing. And they were told to make a multiplayer game using an engine that was never designed for multiplayer. And it should have been pushed out by a year or two easy, but it wasn't. It was released and they regretted it for various reasons. Bethesda, I have to admit, took the Final Fantasy 14 route and they said, okay, we gotta fix this. And they did their best. They eventually released Broken Steel, which and Wastelanders, and a few other expansion packs, which reintroduced survivors into the West Virginia wasteland. So now you actually had NPCs. They fixed some of the game's mechanics. They fixed a lot of the player interactions. They made the wasteland into a much better place to play. Nowadays, if you go into Fallout 76, you don't need to play it with someone else. You can. And apparently the player base of Fallout 76 are some of the nicest, most helpful, friendly people in any MMO available today, because everyone who's in there wants to be there. And they've created apparently kind of a wonderful community, which was the initial idea of what Fallout 76 should have been, according to Todd Howard. The problem is that the quality of experience that you have with your fellow characters, quote unquote, is dependent on the quality of the people who are playing the game, which they sort of missed is going to end up being a collection of yahoos who are just some of the most toxic people online and who inevitably are going to be pissed off that Fallout 76 is as bad as it is. So yeah, the newest versions of the game, you can go in, you can play it from scratch, brand new character, and you can play it as a classic Fallout game. You can be a lone wanderer. It's going to be a lot more challenging in places. And there are a lot of places where it's, you know, advantageous to have a party and to team up with other, other players, but you can play it as Fallout. I came back to it in 2020 and I had a okay time with it. I walked away from it thinking if I had played this version of it initially, this would have gotten like maybe a high 70, maybe, but there's only so much they can do to fix it. Unfortunately, like it was, in my opinion, they would have been better off just eventually folding and then releasing Fallout 76, a retooled Fallout 76 as a single player RPG. The foundation that they built is so good. The world design is so good. They could have done it and they didn't. So, yeah. And that, unfortunately, is the last video game release of a Fallout game. Now, we're going to start wrapping things up a little bit, but before we do that, I want to talk about spiritual successors. So as Fallout is a spiritual successor to Wasteland, it's very appropriate that Fallout itself has a number of spiritual successors. The most obvious ones on the face of it are Wasteland 2 and Wasteland 3, which are both CRPGs and sequels to the original Wasteland. So these follow the world of the original game. However, there's a lot of CRPG followed in there, like a lot of it. And not even in places you'd expect. Like Wasteland 2 uses a squad-based party, which pulls from Tactics. If you love Fallout and you want games that are like Fallout and set in a similar world as Fallout, the Wasteland games are probably where you want to go. Have either of you played Wasteland 2 or Wasteland 3?
I've touched those, both of those, a little bit. I didn't play them extensively. But I do really love like Wasteland 3's setting. The frozen waste is pretty unique for the post apocalyptic genre for But it's obvious that like the resurgence of Fallout through Fallout 3 like inspired those games to be made. So it's a lot less personal. Those are definitely lower budget than like the Bethesda games for sure. But since you build all of your characters, it does feel a little bit impersonal, I would say, in terms of characters. But there's definitely some interesting stuff in there if you do enjoy the Fallout style world. So
yes. There was also Atom RPG, which released, I think, last year, which is sort of like a Russian-based look at the world of Fallout. It's not set in Fallout's canon, obviously, but it's set in the USSR post-apocalypse. Really good buzz behind that game, too. There is a game that's actually released it's releasing this week, I think. It's called Broken Roads. Abe, you have written a review for it. You don't sound overly enthusiastic.
It's not that it was a poor ideas necessarily, more of a big swing and a miss kind of. What's interesting about it is that a lot of the interface and kind of the the structure of the game definitely resembles the Fallout 1 and 2. So if that's something you're interested in, and it might be worth checking out for that. In terms of the story, it's extremely philosophical. It's got this I guess the gimmick of it is that you have this literally a moral compass, which is literally a chart that tracks your personal worldview with your golden arc showing that showing what your worldview is at the current point. It's a kind of a frustrating experience. It leans very heavily into the philosophy. If you're not well read on classical philosophy, it's basically philosophy 101.
Ah, okay.
You'll get a big crash course on Machiavelli and who else? Plato and Sartre and all the big classic philosophy authors. And it also like Fallout 76 takes despite your moral compass and the freedom to choose things, it kind of takes a very deterministic view on things.
It sounds like it lacks the fun of Fallout.
You know, it's a different sort of fun. It's okay. A game from it's an Australian game. Despite being from Australia, it really doesn't lean into the Mad Max aesthetic at all, like the first two Fallout games did. It's got a very Australian sense of humor. kind of a self-deprecating, kind of a brutal sense of humor that might appeal to some of my less favorite aspects of the original two Fallout games. I think it's probably going to be rather polarizing. So, my review should be up on the site now. I think it is a middling review because I think some people might really like it, and I think others will hate it. Mm-hmm. And I can see both sides of that. So,
There's that. If you're looking for a game that's much more in line with a spiritual successor to the Bethesda era Fallout games, or more specifically New Vegas, we have The Outer Worlds, which was, partially designed by the original creators of Fallout. I love The Outer Worlds. It's obviously not post-apocalyptic. It takes place in it's a sci-fi game that takes place in, for God's sake, it's basically Firefly the game. It plays like they had the Firefly license and lost it midway through, and they were like, ah, crap, okay. And then they pivoted and made their own thing. But it does very much have that kind of aesthetic, a Fallout, that sense of humor. It's a lot like New Vegas in a lot of ways. Not as good as New Vegas, but we'll see what happens when The Outer Worlds 2 comes out. Now, before we go, Fallout, especially the Bethesda games, what they're really known for at this point, I think one of the reasons why there's so much... the reason why the games are still so popular is because of modding. Fan modding has become a massive thing in the Fallout because the creation engine and originally the Gainsborough engine was just infinitely customizable. Also, I think because the games were so broken when they were released and buggy that there's a lot of room to do things that they shouldn't be able to do. So before we go, I just wanted to ask you if you have any favorite mods from any of the Fallout games that you'd like to share with us and why.
I'm not a huge modder, but the one I remember seeing the videos of that I liked the most was turning all the Death Claws into Randy Savage, and he has all of his signature lines and stuff, oh yeah, at you, yeah, that's pretty. Mm-hmm. I enjoy watching the videos of that. I can't imagine playing it, but
it's not just that. I mean, also Skyrim has the Thomas the Tank Engine replacing the Dragons mod. Jimmy, how about you?
So I'm also not really big on mods, but there are a couple for New Vegas. There's a New Vegas bounties mod that kind of adds it adds like some bounty side quests in for it. And for Fallout 4, the one that sticks out the most to me that kind of makes up for one of the main criticisms that people have of the game. There's a mod called Role Players Expanded Dialogue. Mm-hmm. you know, which kind of, it gives you a lot more unique dialogue options, depending on your build and your perks and things like that, which a lot of people found lacking in Fallout 4. So I found it pretty enjoyable using that one.
Cool. I think, okay, for me, I'll pick two Fallout 4 mods because I think that Fallout 4 has things that need to be fixed. Incidentally, bounties is great. I loved bounties. It's a great thing. Going on and talking about fixing many of the RPG elements of Fallout 4, there's a mod called Another Life, which essentially, you know, the game starts the same as you're looking in the mirror with your wife, and then you can pick, this is a dream, I want to wake up. And then it will let you pick a location in the wasteland and a job, and you can pick your stats, and you'll wake up there as a completely unrelated character who is not Nate or Nora. And you can just start playing the game as if it's any other Fallout game. And here's the cool part. The main quest is still incorporated into the game, but unlike the original where it's you play as Nate or Nora and you need to find your child, this quest is now just another Fallout quest. You can go as your new character to Vault 111 and go downstairs and explore it like it's a vault for the first time. And you can find the bodies. You can find the frozen body still, you know, shot. And then you can find the body of Nate or Nora laying on the floor, having been killed by a faulty power generator. And beside them is a holotape that is Kellogg stealing the baby. So from that point on, finding the baby is just another quest. You have no personal connection to it. So it depersonalizes the main quest while at the same time opening up Fallout 4 to a lot of role-playing opportunities. It's wonderful and really extends the replay value of the game. And fixes one of the major problems with it. The other quest that I'd DLC, well, it is DLC in a way, mod that I'd like to mention is called Sim Settlements, specifically Sim Settlements 2. And this, I would argue, doesn't just fix the settlement system, but dramatically improves it. It's so good. It does take a lot of, instead of building yourself, you'll place lots. And you will have various types, just like SimCity, and you'll assign your settlers to one of those lots, and they will build that lot. And there are actual, like, blueprints that you can pick and find for your various settlements, for each particular settlement, and you can just assign a blueprint to that settlement, and the settlers will go and they'll build that blueprint. So instead of your, like, makeshift random shack in the corner, you can actually have, like, expanding cities. And these cities have, like, various levels that they can continue to build up. And it makes the settlement system into a remarkable, remarkable living sense. Like, it's like the wasteland is developing without you. And even better, there's a storyline, a DLC quality storyline that's attached to this with some exceptionally good voice acting. I highly recommend it for any playthrough. It integrates perfectly into the game. I would not play Fallout 4 without Sim Settlements included. Okay, well, folks, that's Fallout. And here's the news. If you love Fallout and you want more of it, you're going to get it because Amazon Prime has released a 8-part TV series, a first season, maybe, we don't know. Might be a second season. I hope it is because I'm reviewing it for the site. And thus far, it's really, really good. I think that my review should have come out yesterday. Of the season, I'm really enjoying it. I'm really, really enjoying it. And if you love Fallout, I think you're really going to enjoy it too. I'm going to be talking about it pretty much exclusively on next week's Random Encounter. So on Monday, there'll be my full breakdown talking about the game on there. If you'd like to find a way to support us here at RPG Fan, we've opened up a store. You can find it at www.rpgfan.com/shop. What I'd really like to draw your attention to, aside from the mugs and things like that, is the RPG Fan Reviewed Card Collection. This is a collaboration with Hyperplay RPG, and it is a showcase of nearly 300 review cards, as you can see on Instagram. I think it's a really, really cool book. I highly recommend checking it out. I love it. I have one on my shelf. It's just the greatest. If you want to support us here at Retro Encounter, you can do so by checking out our past episodes. Our last episode was Muso Encounter, which kind of encompasses the warrior games. So the big battle style games, and a really cool episode focused on that. Random Encounter, like I said, want to support us? Check out next week's episode where we're going to be talking about the Fallout TV show. If this hasn't given you enough Fallout, that hopefully will. We also have Rhythm Encounter, which is RPG Fans Music Podcast. I don't want you to miss our April Fool's Day episode this year. I love our April Fool's Day episodes. In the past, we've done a karaoke episode. Last year, we did the All Chocobo episode. And this year, we're doing our favorite sound effects in RPGs. So give that a listen. If you'd like to get in contact with us here at Retro Encounter, you can fire us off a message at retro@rpgfan.com. Love to hear from you. If you have any ideas for future episode themes or discussion questions or anything else you'd like to share, just fire a message off there, and I'm sure Solosi will get back to you. If you'd like to send me an email, you can do so at jlogan@rpgfan.com. You can also find me at Mastodon at johnologan@mastodon.social. I'm not the only person on here with a social media presence. Abe, where can we find you online?
The best place to find me is on Instagram. It's Abe Kobolansky.
Cool. And Jimmy?
The easiest way to find me would be on the RPG Fan Discord. I'm there under Turner Based XP.
Cool. If you enjoyed this podcast, please, you can share it with your friends. You can help us get the word out there, and you can rate us on iTunes or your other podcast player of choice. I would really like to thank both of you for joining me today. I really love Fallout. I've loved Fallout for years, and getting a chance to chat about it with other people and hopefully build a little bit of hype for the TV show, which I think is really worth watching for fans of the series and for people who aren't fans of the series, actually. So thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Enjoy the wasteland.
Enjoy the wasteland indeed. And for everyone out there, I hope you enjoy the wasteland too. And, you know, if you're setting out under the green tinted stars, looking up at the sky, just remember me saying good night and good luck.